In the name of the one God, who is lover, beloved, and love overflowing. In 1920, Rilke wrote a verse dedication to Frau Theodora von der Mühl. The final thing is not self-subjugation, but silent loving. From such centeredness, we feel round even rage and desolation, the finally enfolding tenderness. We know the paintings so well, they're cliché. There she sits, usually surrounded by books, with a lily in her hand and a feathered angel bending toward her. Sometimes she's holding her breviary, sometimes demure, sometimes with a fiery cast to her eyes. Thanks to biblical and historical scholarship, we know that Mary would have been a teenager and a poor villager. We know she had courage or was foolhardy, probably both. She was a teenager, after all. Tradition tells us that she was next to sinless, the archetypal saint, so empty of self that she could receive God's fullness. After centuries and centuries of interpretation and imagining the scene, it's too easy to think of the Mary whom Gabriel greets as either a demure, faceless vessel waiting to be filled, or the cosmic feminine divine, Sophia incarnate, who knew inherently how to open herself to God's indwelling. But if Jesus was fully human, then his mother certainly was too. She was a real historical person. She had hopes and fears. She loved and wept and twisted her hair in boredom. The demure, faceless vessel and the cosmic feminine divine both rob us of a foothold in this mysterious commingling of a human life with God's life. Mary was a girl who said yes to God with whatever freedom was available to her. We know her decision produced a great number of trials. Teenage pregnancy out of wedlock, a precocious child to raise, always running off to the rabbis, watching the torture and death of her child, wrapping herself in the mystery of his rising, this one who was and was not the man she had raised. But of course, all those trials were to come later. For now, in this moment of Annunciation, the angel sings his Ave, and Mary pours herself out as best she can. This greeting from the Holy One is the key that unlocks her heart, the sun that warms the rose of her soul, coaxing it into bloom. For now, she knows the rose's sweetness, even as the thorns hint their sting under the pads of her thumbs. This pouring out of herself to God, this making herself empty and hollow, was not, as Rilke points out, self-subjugation. The virtue of Mary's response, "Be it unto me according to your word," is not that she obliterates her humanity, but that at least for the space of a breath, she allows God to fill and surround that humanity. She becomes a light with herself, even as God overshadows her. Falling as this feast usually does in Lent, I can't help but wonder how this experience followed Mary throughout her life. Did she hear the rustle of the angel's wings as she stood at the foot of the cross? As her son cried out his, "It is finished," did she remember her own cry of astonishment and joy those 30-odd years before? Seeing the thorns wrapped around his brow, could she still smell the sweetness of her soul opening to God? As Jesus surrendered his spirit, was she emptied of self once more, barren or fallow or hollowed out for God? Every so often, Good Friday and Annunciation fall on the same day, uniting into one the moment God's Spirit took birth in Jesus and then left his body. The two poles of living and dying wrapped round each other like the snake eating its tail. Although this will not come again in our lifetime, the next time will be 2157, we are living in such a moment today. This year of pandemic, which has seemed an endless Lent in its way, will not resolve itself on Easter. Our joy will be tempered and quiet. The tomb may be empty, but so will most of our churches. And like those first disciples, like Mary, we will throw our Alleluia onto the wind to echo in the heedless world. It's not only our churches that have been carved out. Our hearts have been also. Whether we wish to be or not, we have been hollowed this year, emptied of all our certainties and easy assurances. We are left wide open, waiting for God to fill us up, to be born and then reborn in and through us, to say our yes to God, however we can. What then is the angel's call to us? Perhaps it is like Rilke's greeting to Frau Vandermühl. The final thing is not self-subjugation, but silent loving, from such centeredness we feel round even rage and desolation the finally enfolding tenderness. We don't need to obliterate ourselves to be open to God. Like Mary, we can gather round us all our courage or foolhardiness. We can speak our yes, however timorous or weary it may be today. We can trust, or even pretend to trust, if that's what we have available to us, that God will wrap us up in her finally enfolding tenderness.